I am Plant on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. The author Stephen Galloway joins me now. His new book, The Cellist of Sarajevo, has just been published, and it has already gotten a great deal of buzz and acclaim. All of the reviews I've seen have been tremendously effusive in their praise. The book has been acquired in 17 territories around the world, and some Hollywood studios have been negotiating movie rights. Between 1992 and 1995, the siege of Sarajevo kills thousands. And it is amidst this that the novel is set. A cellist sits in the hollow where a mortar struck, and for the next 22 days, he sits playing Albinoni's Adagio for each of the 22 victims. The cellist underscores and touches the lives of three people who find themselves in the war zone. Kenan, who must walk through the streets from one end to another to collect water for his family. Dragon, another man who finds himself trying to find food. Both are fearful, not knowing where the next shot will land. Arrow, a third character, is a female sniper. Her task is to protect the cellist as he carries out his daily tribute. The three characters never meet, but are all connected by the haunting music as played by the cellist, not to mention the war that they're living amongst. Stephen Galloway joins me from Toronto this morning. He teaches creative writing at UBC and SFU. The Cellist of Sarajevo, $29.95, published by Random House, is his third novel. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Stephen Galloway. Good morning, Mr. Galloway.
Good morning to you.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
What's it been like to get all the sort of reviews that you've gotten thus far? I've read most of them, and for the most part, they've been fantastic.
Yeah, you know, it beats the opposite, I'll tell you that. I mean, reviews are one of those things. It's very nice to get good ones, but sort of take it all with a grain of salt, you know. It's hard to believe the good ones or the bad ones too much.
Is there anything that's been bad? I haven't seen it.
Nothing terrible. No, that hasn't. It's been a very good. I mean, I've got bad reviews for past books,
but not for this one.
Not so far. No. I'm sure there's one coming, though. That's just how.
One of the reviews that I've read says that one fault that they found was that they found the book too short. That
right.
Must be a really complimentary, don't you think? Gratifying, almost.
Yeah, no, I have no problem with that criticism. better to be accused of too short than too long, right?
The cellist in the title, he's not the main character. There are three main characters, which I've described already in the intro. The cellist that you refer to, that was a real person, was it not?
Yep. Yeah, a man named Vedran Smilovic. He was the principal cellist for the Sarajevo Opera. He did essentially what the cellist in the book does. He lives in Belfast now.
Did you seek him out?
I have only recently, I sent him an email a while ago, sort of saying, you know, here's a book that's been written. That I guess sort of features you as a character. I wanted to make him aware of it, but when I was writing the book, I didn't seek him out. Because the characters are spending a fair amount of time sort of speculating as to the motives of the cellist, you know, why is he doing this, what does he hope to accomplish, I wanted to be kind of as blind as they would have been in terms of any sort of concrete answer, so I thought it would actually harm my perspective if I spoke to him.
Well, when was it that you'd actually first heard of what he'd done?
You know, I'm not entirely sure. It's one of those things that I feel like I've always known it, but I can't, that obviously can't be true. There was a New York Times magazine article that was done at the time on him, just a two-page spread, and I think in the mid-90s or late-90s, someone I knew told me about it, and I looked it up, and then it sort of just sat in the back of my mind for 4 or 5 years. It's a very compelling story, the story of the actual cellist of Sarajevo, and it was one of those things that wouldn't leave my consciousness.
You were obviously moved by it.
Yeah, absolutely, as I think a great many people were. There's been a lot of people who have written various things about what he did.
Arrow, she's also based on someone real, right?
Loosely. I heard a Radio Denmark interview about snipers, and there was a woman interviewed in it named Errol. And, just hearing her voice sort of made a character start to exist in my mind, but, I don't know that the arrow in the book has much in common with the actual woman who was Arrow. I honestly don't know that much about the woman who was Arrow. I tried to track her down and find more about her and was unsuccessful.
I'm trying to figure out, Stephen, at what precise moment was there when you thought that there was a story here? Was it reading that Times article? Was it listening to that documentary?
You know, it was more thinking about the thematic elements of the book, you know, the idea of abdication of hatred, you know, letting other people tell us who we hate, and in the run-up to and early days of the Iraq War, you know, and Afghanistan, like 2002, 2003, thinking about what it must be like to live in a city where, you know, your streets are being bombed, and you were just a person going to work and all that sort of thing. And, you know, as a writer, when you think about things, you're often thinking about them in terms of a way to write about them. And then connecting those ideas to Sarajevo and realizing, you know, the cellist, the story that you know there is a great entry point into those ideas. That was sort of the moment at which the book solidified as a book.
And how long ago was that? Are we talking years now? Or?
Oh, yeah, that would have been 2004. No, probably late 2003.
And why Sarajevo? Your background isn't Serbian.
No, I think my understanding of what Sarajevo was before writing the book was probably the same as most Westerners, and that I knew of it, and I remember the Olympics having been there, and I remember there was a terrible war there, but that I didn't know much about it at all. It was more for, I guess, no, it's a good thing in a way, but if you want to write a book set during a war that is in a sort of first world Western sort of place, there's a short list of places you can choose, thankfully. And Sarajevo was just, it was a natural fit for the story I wanted to tell. And then the more I learned about Sarajevo, the more I felt about it, and it sort of led me to it, in a way.
And there's a list of people in the back there that you talk to. Are they friends of yours, or?
Yeah, I mean, they are now.
Yeah.
A lot of Sarajevans were really generous with their time and memories and parts of themselves, willing to talk to me for hours and hours and hours.
Did you do much research over there?
I was there for about 3 weeks. The majority of research was done talking to people. While I was over there, I had written a draft of the book at that point, and I was more there to see what I'd got wrong, to, you know, walk the streets Kenan walked and sit in the road where Kenan was trapped and all that sort of thing, and, you know, walk with someone who was there during the siege and say, okay, tell me how it was different then than it is now, and for visuals. But the bulk of the actual research was in reading books and mostly talking to people.
And the reaction to the Sarajevo you depict has been what? Has it been favorable? Do people say that you've captured it correctly?
The ones I've spoken to have so far. It might be a bit too soon to tell. The book's only been out for a few weeks, and I probably don't have a very large sample set to choose from. But since so far, the reaction has been overwhelming, just in terms of how, I guess, effusive in their support the Sarajevans who have read it have been.
The book is from what I've read of it, and forgive me, I've only read brief parts of it.
Yeah.
I don't usually read fiction, but this is, I must I must admit, something that I will probably finish very, very shortly afterwards. It's very suspenseful, and it's internally told. There's not much action. Is this akin to work that you've done previously in your previous novels?
Those two particular elements, perhaps the suspense element, might be something all three books have in common. I would say probably, though, the other ones have slightly more, just in terms of physical action going on. My most recent one was about a family of Romani-Hungarian tightrope walkers, so obviously there's a lot of tightrope walking and physical things going on in it. So it probably does differ in that. So every book's a little different. I would get bored if I kept writing the same sort of book over and over again. There's definitely...
I'm interested in how you write. Do you write on a computer?
Yeah. I have such terrible penmanship that if I don't, I have trouble telling what it is I've written out. I write the first drafts on a computer. I do a lot of sort of pre-planning and outlining on whiteboards and, you know, cards on bulletin boards, stuff like that. And once I have an actual manuscript, I print it off and I sort of work off the paper, you know, crossing out things, making notes to myself and moving things.
I was reading your bio. You teach creative writing at UBC and SFU.
Yeah.
Is that the same program at UBC that you were in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually getting a bit sad. I think only two or three more years and I'll have been in that program as a teacher or a student for almost half my life. It may be time to find another job. I don't know. Although I really like it, so I'd be hard-pressed to do better as a way to get out of the house. So.
And how do you work? I mean, you have this job. How do you sort of budget your time so that you can work on a novel like this?
Well, I mean, it's a matter of almost mental compartmentalization. When I'm at work, I'm at work, and I try not to think about the novel. And, you know, I don't take student work home with me. I do all my work in my office at UBC. So I'm typically up at UBC or SFU 2 days a week, maybe three. And when I'm there, I'm there. And then when I'm at home working, I'm at home working.
Do you have this novel, when you were working on this, was this the only writing you were doing?
Yeah, I'm a terrible multitasker in terms of writing projects. I have writer friends who, you know, when they're working on a novel, they can also do some magazine articles and maybe work on a screenplay or a story on the side. And no, I'm kind of a project monogamist. I can't think about more than one thing at a time. Too bad, because it would be nice to finish something once every so often instead of once every 5 years. Depressing.
This book talks to us about the power of art, music, and culture.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, talk to me about that and why you think, even in a time of war, even in a time where in Syria was under siege, that there was some sort of healing quality in that what the cellist did.
Yeah, I think especially in times like that, things like music and writing and art are important. We have a view in the West here that, you know, artistic enterprise is a luxury item. You know, it's something you do if you have lots of free time and can afford, and you know, in when push comes to shove, it's a frivolous thing. I think a lot of men don't read fiction because it's sort of viewed as kind of a frivolous waste of time. But, you know, civilization and society isn't just roads and buildings and infrastructure and stuff like that. Civilization's an agreement that people make with each other on an ongoing basis to behave in a certain way. And one of the functions of art is to invoke feeling and make us, remind us of this the fact that we are human. I mean, animals don't. It's one of the things that separate us from animals is our ability to produce, you know, music and writing and art and all these things. So, I mean, you find in Sarajevo, it wasn't just the cellist that was doing this. It was, you know, there were film festivals going on. There were dance performances, all sorts of things, more than ever before. And it was an overt act by Sarajevans to say, we are still civilized. We're not going to sink to the level of animals, despite what other people might want us to do.
How much do you read?
I read a lot, but it comes in waves. I mean, I find it, when I'm actually writing a book, hard to read just because I'm so tired of words at the end of the day. But, you know, if I'm editing or right now, it's on book tours are great for getting reading done because you end up spending a lot of time in a hotel room by yourself. So I probably, I don't know, read 70 or 80 novels a year and about half as many nonfiction books, plus all the student work I read for school.
Oh.
I'll probably be blind in about 5 years.
On the book tour, are you able to write at all?
No. I can't get anything productive done on a book tour. I know writers who, you know, after the reading, they say, oh, you know, I'm going to go back to my hotel room and do some work, and I secretly don't believe them. I think that they just don't want to go for a drink with me. I don't understand how anyone can work in hotel rooms.
Amongst the reviews that I've read, a word that I saw a lot was haunting. And as the creator of all of this, was it hard for you to get away from the characters that you've wrought, the writing?
It was hard while I was writing it to go between the world of the book that was in my head and then back to my normal life. You know, go push the kids on the swing or, you know, do my taxes or what, you know, the things that we all have to do. When the book was done, I was frankly happy to be done and ready to leave that world. It was a tough book to write, though, mentally. I mean, a lot of very terrible things went on in Sarajevo that I was aware of, and, you know, I don't think a overly depressing, heavy book, but some of the research that went into it was.
And how has the reaction, what's your reaction, I should say, to other people's reaction? Like, do you see what others see? When you read the reviews and they say this character is like this or so on, or this happened here for this reason, do you find yourself saying, well, that's not really what I intended?
I'm really always curious to see what people take out of it. You know, the way I view books is I have an imaginative experience and, you know, I write it down and it gets printed up on, you know, black marks on white paper. And then I think one of the reasons books have managed not to disappear from the world despite, you know, every 6 months someone saying they are, is that what we do when we read is we take this object and use it as a template to have an imaginative experience, and everyone's imaginative experience is going to be slightly different. So I actually find it really interesting to see, you know, what did you think of this character? How did you interact with them? Because it's strange, you know, of the three characters, you ask, if I ask 10 people what, you know, rank the three characters in the order you'd most like to go to lunch with them, you're going to get every possible combination. You know, some people have said, you know, I really loved Arrow, she was great, and others have said, you know, I didn't really care for that Arrow, but boy, Kenan was super, and I really identified with him. So it's a really interesting thing to watch from the other side of it.
And the book has been sold now, I understand, in 17 territories around the world.
And we're up to 19 now.
Really?
In a busy week, yeah.
And Hollywood studios have been talking to you or talking to your people?
Yeah, we've signed an option agreement, which doesn't actually mean all that much. But I guess it means they have the ability to make it into a movie with the people who produced and wrote Shrek. and the Narnia movies.
Is that? I mean, how do you feel when your work is supposedly there is interest in making it into a film? I mean, you obviously didn't think writing it that this would become a film.
No, and I'm still not entirely sure how they're going to do that because so much of it takes place inside characters' heads. I'm interested. I mean, my take on it is it's not something that as the writer of the book you have much control over what will happen. So you sort of just surrender it to them.
Do you do so willingly, though, Stephen?
Yeah. More or less. I mean, if I didn't want to, the only way to do it would be to just not sell the film rights, which is something I could do. My sort of feeling is, you know what, even if it was a terrible movie, no one ever blames the writer. If anything, people will say, oh, you know what, the book was way better. You should read the book.
Right.
And if it's a good movie, then it will attract readers to your work. And I don't really see a downside to it. You know, plus if they actually made it into a movie, I could pay off my mortgage. So, I mean, it would be a tough thing to say, no, please don't make it into a movie. I would rather not be. I would rather not have your $500,000. Thank you.
What are you working on now?
Oh, nothing. I don't. Yeah, I'm gonna try to survive the book tour and then go back into my room by myself and sit quietly and wait for an idea to attract magnetism again. I don't have anything right now that's pulling at me, and what I've learned in the past is if you try to force it to happen, it won't. Sort of have to sit quietly and wait for an idea and operate under the sort of, it's a faith-based thing, right? You operate under the idea that because you've always got an idea before, you will therefore get one again. Well, knowing that that's not how things work, but I don't really know how to get an idea, so wait.
Waiting, indeed. Stephen, I do appreciate you coming on today and talking to us about this book. Many congratulations on it, and continued good luck with it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you.
I must admit, Stephen, that, as I said, I don't read fiction, and we have a lot of fiction writers on from time to time, and, you know, we sort of go through the interview and you don't think you're going to read the book afterwards, certainly not afterwards, because what's the point? The interview's done. But I must admit that I will be picking,